Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva, and on the next two podcasts, we're going to feature a recent webinar I hosted to examine the just-released macro rule for 2021 and the changes it involves. It's a topic of importance for clinicians and administrators alike, and the webinar was part of the Vizient Medical Leadership Series. It features two leading experts, and we think you'll find the insights valuable. So here's our objectives for this meeting today. First, we're going to outline the 2021 changes to the quality payment programs, including eligibility requirements, virtual groups and facility-based reporting, and the Merit-Based Incentive Payment Program, or MIPS, as well as the MIPS value pathway. We're also going to describe the outlook for APMs in 2021 and explain the updated telehealth payment rules for 2021 as well. So let's meet our guest. I'd like to welcome back Dr. Maddie McDowell. Maddie, tell us a little bit about your background and what you do here at SG2.
Thank you, Tom. I am a pediatrician by background, have practiced as a primary care pediatrician and hospitalist for many years. I am currently the medical director at SG2, principal there, working on key healthcare trends that are impacting the health systems.
Thank you, Maddie, and welcome again. Also returning is Valinda Rutledge. Valinda, also tell us about what you do for SG2 and your background, please.
Well, thank you, Tom. It's always a high point of my year to be invited back. I think this is Maddie and I's like third or fourth time doing this, so we so enjoy it. I'm a subject matter expert for SG2, working with Maddie and her team. And my background, I was previously at CMS and CMMI, in which I was one of the original people that set up for the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation.
Thank you, Linda. Really appreciate you coming on board as well. So let's start things out with E&M codes.
Yes. So this has been a long time in coming. This has been like 3 years in development. So when CMS had put forward initially in terms of making changes with E&M visits, because we haven't had changes in decades with it, they had first thought that they would go from 5 levels down to 3. Well, they got an incredible amount of, I would have to tell you, Tom, a negative feedback from the industry. I looked last night, and I think that initial thing, they got close to 10,000 letters from people saying, I do not want it moving from 5 to 3. So they've spent the last few years in gathering stakeholder input. So again, and you hear this several times throughout this presentation, how important it is for stakeholders to continue to tell CMS your thoughts about it, because this is a perfect example how they listened and they made the change. So this is the effective date, January 1st, 2021. So we're finally seeing the changes that will be implemented that we have been discussing for the last 3 years. So first of all, they're going to maintain the 5 levels for established patients, but for new patients, they'll go down to 4. But what's even more important is they're moving away from systems in which you have to give a history and physical with these visits to, they're going to allow you to make the decision based upon what's medically appropriate for the patient. And the E&M visit level 1 through 5 or 1 through 4 is based either on medical decision-making or time. So you don't have to go through an entire history and physical every time you see the patient. The other thing that's very important for these changes is that they have actually added 2 new Medicare add-on codes. The first one is for complexity, particularly surrounding chronic conditions and complexity in primary care. And the second one is a prolonged visit. Both of these have to be attached to the E&M visit. And as we know, E&M codes are routinely being used by medical specialists, not so much by procedural, because the procedural providers usually use the bundle codes for them. So they're anticipating close to 90% of the E&M codes will have that complexity attached to it. And so we're anticipating that overall, the medical specialties will actually see an increase in reimbursement in 2021 because of these 2 additional codes.
You know, interestingly, Medicare, I was reading last night, says that about 2/3 of their beneficiaries have comorbidities. Mm-hmm. And so they're expecting that this will be used for a high percent of all billable visit E&M codes, this add-on code for complexity. And in addition to that, they've deliberately not put a lot of restrictions on it. The goal is to be able to reward doctors for more in-person care management time with their patients. They estimate there'll be 2.3 million hours less of burden in terms of documentation with this change in visit E&M. So they're really trying to help physicians be able to better manage the complex patients, giving them more time to do it, more payment to do it, and less documentation.
And I'm sure all of us have read, there have been some pushback from this change because unfortunately, the Medicare physician fee schedule has to be budget neutral. So for CMS to give these additional codes to mainly the medical specialists, they had to then pull back on some of the reimbursement for the procedural specialist. And so as all of us have seen, the procedural specialists are pushing back on this. They're not very happy with this because some of them are seeing substantial decreases of 11 to 14%. And so they're very concerned about it. And so there's a lot of conversation about pushing on Congress to alleviate not having it be budget neutral for 2021. But at this current time, CMS said we want to give more money to the medical specialists to deal with these chronic diseases, as you said, Maddie.
What we're seeing is the feedback that they've been receiving in reference to decreasing that provider burden, in addition to having more time or at least some recognition of the time that's necessary for patients with multiple comorbidities, we're seeing that occurring. I think that's actually very positive. You know, we also saw that during the pandemic, a lot of effort was made to promote virtual care. And pretty much for many of us, that's the only type of care we were providing. Maddie, can you walk us through what happened with telehealth in reference to the efforts made by CMS and then what we can anticipate after going into 2021?
Yeah, big changes. Because of the PHE, Medicare was allowed to direct funding to telehealth. One, they removed barriers. So things like they waived out-of-state licensure restrictions for telehealth. They allowed new patients to have telehealth, not just established patients get paid for telehealth visits. And they also accepted audio only, so telephone services for telehealth, rather than video synchronous. In addition, the parity that they paid the telehealth visits, 100% of in-person, they applied that to facility fees, so the place of service field as well. And they also made some reduction in barriers around what type of HIPAA-compliant platforms people used. You know, all of this was done because of the emergency situation we were under. And so now the question is, what will happen going forward? A lot of people are wondering what will happen with telehealth payment. Well, we have some indication in the final rule of what will happen for next year. So when we look at next year, there has been some limited ability to change the payment without congressional approval. You need congressional approval to make changes in payment for telehealth for the most part. There are some exceptions. One is for rural providers. And so in the final rule, they've offered 9 additional services for payment for telehealth for rural providers. Now, under the PHE, they've also expanded the list of services that can be paid for virtually. So this will be under the PHE only, which is expected to go through midsummer next year with the pandemic. And many of these services will actually continue to be paid for the conclusion of that calendar year. In addition to this, they did make some clarifications about remote patient monitoring services. So the codes that allow you to do remote patient monitoring, under PHE, you're allowed to do that for new patients as well, but after PHE, it's for established only. They clarified which providers can do this. So APPs, nurse practitioners, PAs, as well as physicians. It can be for both acute and chronic conditions, so not just chronic. The code is a 20-minute code that can be billable every 30 days as long as at least 16 days of electronic data has been reported to the provider. It cannot be patient self-reported. And so this is some clarification and hopefully expanded use of RPM over time. The communication-based technology codes that were already there that are, you know, somewhat challenging to use, but they expanded the role to new roles. So other scope of practice can now be billing these codes as well.
Now, the reason I was saying that it was interesting is because many of our members are still kind of figuring out going into 2021 what's going to be their virtual platform, if you will. So that gives us an idea of what CMS is thinking through. In addition to that, we've also gotten from some of our National Patient Family Advisory Committee that we've been doing surveying throughout the pandemic, that they actually would prefer a virtual platform for established relationships and not so much for new. So just some interesting feedback and what we're learning from there.
One other point, Tom, to mention, as we go forward, there is going to be a focus on putting some guardrails around payment to reduce fraud. So where we're probably not going to see the widespread applicability of telehealth across a lot of sites and services, there'll be some more guardrails over time, and we'll be following that carefully.
Okay. Belinda, we also saw that there was an expansion of scope of practice that occurred during the pandemic. So what's the final rule on what is obviously CMS's efforts to expand or even promote team-based care?
Yeah, so CMS has really a great deal of interest in terms of expanding scope of practice to have mid-level providers being able to operate at the top of their license. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they acknowledge in the rule that they are restricted by state practice laws. And some of the states, as you know, Tom, is very open, and then others are very, very restrictive. So CMS would love to see that expanded more, but they did as much as they possibly could from a Medicare perspective. As Maddie said, they actually went ahead and allowed some of the mid-levels OTPT to be able to bill under a communication technology. They're also allowing some of the mid-levels to be able to do diagnostics going forward and being able to order those. And they're also allowing OT and PT to delegate some of the maintenance therapy to therapy assistance. So as Manny has said, they've tried not only telehealth, but also expansion of scope of practice with many mid-level providers during this PHE, and they would love to see some of this continue. But it's going to take all of us working together and in our individual states to push on this to get some of this even more expanded.
Particularly since we start approaching the early post-pandemic era, which will hopefully be around the summer, access is going to be a huge issue, and even more so why we need to look at the team-based health.
Right.
So let's get down to macro. That's why the majority of us are here today. So what are the changes occurring in macro?
First of all, they have moved the threshold from 45 to 60. So you have to have at least 60 points to be able to not get a negative 9%. Okay. So they moved up that bar. However, to be able to access the $500 million bonus, they actually went ahead and kept it at 85. So that's good. But we need to recognize that that $500 million, that sort of that pool for the high performers goes away in 2022. Unless Congress decides to replenish it. And personally, Tom, with all the deficit problems that we have, I don't see them going ahead and replenishing it. It would be great if they did, but I'd be very surprised. So I think as an industry, we sort of have to expect 2022 will be the last year you'll be able to access that special high performer pool that you get when you go above 85. In 2022, both quality and cost has to be equal at 30%. And so what they did during this year is they actually decreased quality down from 45 to 40 and increased cost up 5%. And so that is trying to get them as close as possible for 2021. But 2022, they are mandated by Congress to have both cost and quality equal at 30%. And then a couple other things that they did that I think will be a big help. Number one is the complex patient bonus. Now, this is for only 2020. They did not suggest it for 2021. Now, the new administration coming in with new rules may decide to continue it through 2021. But this rule said just 2020. Because of COVID, you now, instead of 5 complex patient bonus points, you can actually get 10. You can actually double the amount. So I would highly recommend all of you on this webinar, look for a way to capture those so that you are able to optimize your amount of complex patient bonus to get double the points, because they're anticipating COVID patients, even in the ambulatory setting, non-hospitalized consume a lot of resources. And so I really am pleased that they have doubled it. But right now they've just said for 2020. And I think we're going to see COVID in the first quarter of 2021. So we may be able to push on CMS and say, come on, guys, give us that complex patient bonus again for 2021. And then final, they said that if you think because of COVID, you need to have exemptions to not go into that negative pool of, you know, you think that you're not going to be able to reach that 60, you can actually apply for what's called uncontrollable circumstances. And so if you feel through COVID, maybe you had staff, many of your staff got COVID, or you had to close down your office for a while because you lacked PPE, any of those things that you feel disrupted your operations, apply for the exemption, particularly if you think that you may fall below and actually get a negative adjustment. So I think, Tom, they tried to be as fair as possible with the practices, saying, what can we do to help you through this?
Hey, how about in reference to some of the natural disasters they had during 2021, with so many hurricanes, tropical storms? Is that a problem?
Yes, those are included, and they've always been included. Like the previous year when the wildfires came through California, they actually allowed almost the entire state of California to be able to apply for this. Now, of course, the ones that applied, Tom, was the ones that felt they were going to get a negative adjustment. Right. No need to apply if you think you're going to get your positive adjustment.
So think it through. So Maddie, let's go into MIPS. What financial impacts do we see actually beginning there?
Yeah, I want to mention again what Belinda just said about the financial impact, and the uncontrollable circumstances will play a role in this. And let me explain why. We this year experienced the first year where no increase in the physician fee schedule occurred. We talked about this before, that so the only way you could see an increase, even a cost of living adjustment, is through the MIPS adjustment, a positive bonus. Paper, that's increasing. In 2021, that's going up to 7%, upwards of the highest of a 7% bonus adjustment and a negative 7% penalty. But it's important to mention that in previous years, providers haven't been getting that maximum adjustment up simply because it's budget neutral and the penalty pool has been so small and the adjustment pool so high. The minimum score to achieve a bonus is 60, and there are 346,000 plus providers in this estimated for 2021. Similar in previous years, a much higher number of providers in the bonus pool, and that has to be divided equally among them. So in previous years, we've seen the MIPS adjustment up, you know, a little bit above 1%. So not a lot of money. The penalty pool does expand too over time because this minimal threshold has increased to 60. So CMS is projecting there will be more providers in getting a penalty. However, if you can apply for an exemption due to COVID, you will not have to pay this penalty. And so we could see fewer numbers of providers in this bucket as well, as Belinda was referring to. The other thing I want to mention about the $500 million bonus pool, how many providers took advantage of this and were able to get some money from the bonus pool. Now, this is not budget neutral, so this is just additional funding. Mm-hmm. It will go away in 2022. The number of providers that are eligible for this is high too. So it overall was a small amount of money as well. The scoring has stayed the same for promoting interoperability in terms of the weighting, as well as the improvement activities. Those are both going to be weighted the same for next year. What's changed, as Belinda just mentioned, is that quality is coming down a little from 45 to 40%, and cost is coming up. Now, cost is coming up to 20%. It needs to go up all the way equal to quality at 30%. It's been phased in slower than it originally was proposed to do, because of challenges with providers actually being able to do this really well. And so this has been a slower ramp up for this metric, but will increase next year.
Yeah, and Maddie, I will have to tell you, we're going to have to go from 25 to 20 to 30. There was a push for it to go from 15 to 25 so that we could get ready, and providers really pushed on it. And so now I think we're trying to kick the can down the road. And unfortunately, CMS has no discretion. It's right. In the law. They are right. Mandated by Congress. Congress will not be changing that, and they'll have to do 30% in 2022. So that's going to be a big jump for that cost.
And a lot of challenges with that one, too. Right. To be able to really identify the provider that's responsible for the cost, it's a challenging tack to take to be able to do that. So that's why there's been a lot of pushback and wanting to slow that down.
Right.
Yeah, I can particularly see this among organizations that have a larger specialist pool versus that of primary care. That's going to be a major issue as well, particularly among our AMCs. So we also know that MIPS allows for a number of value pathways or MVPs that follow to actually achieve reporting requirements. Melinda, can you explain what an MVP is and what structure is going on behind them?
Sure. So, Tom, as you know, right now, if you are not in a alternative payment model like a bundle or a primary care model or an ACO, then you report through MIPS and you are able to select your quality indicators, your improvement activities, et cetera. Now, your cost is assigned based upon the number of patients that you have that meet definitions with that. Well, what CMS, with the help of AMA has been very involved in this, has worked hard to move what they're going to be calling a MIPS value pathway, MVP. Mm-hmm. And what this is that it would reduce the opportunity and time that they say that the provider has to take in terms of making these selections of quality indicators. What they would do is you would have an MVP that would be assigned to you based upon your specialty. And so it would be a collection of quality measures, improvement activities, and cost that are representative of the patients that you serve. They feel that two things. Number one, it will be a less reporting burden. They will try to get measures that you don't have to submit, that it can be done through claims or another easy way to collect the data. The second is that they really want to begin to align a movement from the providers out of fee-for-service into alternative payment models, into a value-based models. And so these would get you prepared. They would be similar to what you would see if you were participating in a bundle or primary care model. And so what they would like to do is begin this pathway development. Now, they had hoped to have it start in 2021, and they have delayed it until 2022. Tom, I personally think I'm not sure they're going to be ready in 2022 either. Now, they've made some changes here that I want to acknowledge to everybody. First of all, January 7th, they're going to have the first town hall meeting asking for providers to be a part of giving them feedback with the development of this. Second, they did say in this final rule that they had been thinking that this would be mandatory, that you would be assigned these MVPs. Mm-hmm. And what they're thinking of is for the first few years, it'd be optional. So you can make a decision to stay in the current MIPS pathway in which you choose your quality indicator and your improvement activity. And then at some point, it would move to a mandatory, but it would take several years to do that. And so they're trying to be as responsive as possible to the providers, but we all have to understand we are moving in this direction. Eventually, you will be assigned an MVP based upon your specialty. Now, the issue that they're struggling with, Tom, as you and I have talked about, how difficult it's going to be for the multi-specialty practices, and particularly if they are reporting as a group.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about that most groups nowadays are multi-specialty groups and not all metrics apply to every specialty. So I think that actually lends more to our advice that they need to provide more feedback, if you will, to CMS.
Yes, yes, absolutely. The January 7th meeting, I put it on your calendar, and throughout the year, they're going to be asking for feedback about this. And realize what they're thinking of is eventually it'll be mandatory. So the sooner you get involved and get your voice heard for something that'll end up being mandatory.
Well, that's the end of part one of our podcast. We'll return with part two with more information on the macro rule for 2021. Our thanks to Valinda Rutledge and Dr. Maddie McDowell for providing their insights. And to our listeners, please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. And also please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast on the latest in healthcare strategies. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.